welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Yes, welcome back once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 17 for October the 8th, 2013. Please check out my website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com. You can comment on all these shows. Also, if you would like, please leave me a voicemail concerning the shows or any questions you may have about your servers or your networking. And you can leave those voicemails at 724-701-0911. Or simply email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Okay, folks, I hope you've been having a great work week and I hope you haven't been running into too many issues there that we have been running into in our network. In this show, I wanted to talk a little bit about a networking issue that actually happened to us today. So this is pretty fresh and hot off the presses. And we are still working on this issue, and I will tell you about that and what's going on there. But we were actually today, I'm going to give you a little background of this story. We were working along, just like you would any day. Everything was going very well, and we began to start getting tickets at certain websites that normally wouldn't load, or normally would load, would no longer load. Our first thought, you know, as always, is the web filter, because sometimes the web filter will stick and the records will actually lock it up. And then we have to go and we have to do a reboot on that actual web filter. And I'll tell you a little bit more on rebooting there in a few minutes. We're going to be discussing that also today on this show. But after the reboot, we found that the websites would still not load. So we had to dig a little bit deeper. Now, this is the process that we took to actually get this issue, take care of this issue, and work over this issue to get the issue itself out. I'm just trying to get the microphone levels a little bit better here. To get this issue cleared up and get it solved. And I think this is still going to run into tomorrow. We're going to talk about that here in just a minute also. So the first thing we did, our first attempt, was to actually ping a web address. Now, we knew right away, a lot of times when this happens, this is computer-based or workstation-based. You'd go to the workstation, something from that workstation is no longer allowing you to access these websites. So what we wanted to do, first of all, is we turned to our workstations, and we tried it on two of our workstations in the office and found that these websites was not responding. They weren't getting the blocked web page from the web filter, but what they were getting was just a page would come up that said Google cannot find this page. So then I thought, well, we're going to go ahead and ping the IP address. So we pinged a couple outside IP addresses, and we found that those were resolving outside, and things were moving fine. So that pointed us to the DNS server, or the domain name server, because we couldn't look up certain addresses. Now, with that said, we decided to say, well, okay, so we can't look up these certain web addresses, so maybe we can try a couple different addresses, and we did, and they were working fine. So our next process in the overall scheme of things was for us to pull out a cell phone, and we pulled out one of our smartphones, we jumped on the LTE network, or 3G, whatever you have, and we tried to resolve the web page that was giving us an issue. And we found that that web page was resolving just fine. We had no troubles whatsoever with that web page. So we then started digging a little bit deeper. And I told my partner, so what we're going to do next is we took a workstation and we went into the TCP/IP stack, and that's in your networking settings. We are still running IP4, so we opened up the properties in IP4, and we added the open DNS address, just one of those. We added 208.67.222.222, and that is open DNS. We then just applied that and we tried the web address and it worked just fine. So now that pointed really overall that pointed to our internal DNS servers. There was some issue that was not allowing it to resolve these certain addresses, which kind of really threw you off because everything else seemed to be working. So the DNS servers seemed to be running just fine. So my next step was to get these, and we were working with a group of Chromebooks. And if you've ever worked with Chromebooks, you can't, well, you can add a DNS server to it, but it is a little bit lengthy process when you have 150 of these things. So we knew we had to get it to resolve from the DHCP server. Because when a DHCP server hands out the address, it has to be able to hand out this DNS server number that we were using and be able to resolve those addresses. So I put the open DNS server address into our DHCP stack, into the properties of the DHCP server, so it would hand out that open DNS number with them. And that worked fine. No problems. Except, there's always an exception to every rule when you're doing networking and when you're working with large networks as ours with the 700 nodes and a lot of internal addresses, because we have a ton of internal web services that we run. Like you may have a intranet running in your business, and that intranet has to resolve addresses internally as well as being in an outside DNS server to resolve external addresses to bring people back through your firewall. We could talk about that in another show. So what happened was, whenever we tried to resolve any of our internal services, we couldn't access those services because it was trying to go out to the outside address and bring it back through the firewall, which is actually exactly what the firewall set up not to do, not to allow. It makes no sense to go out of your network to come back. So our next step was to try to figure out what was wrong with our DNS servers. Now, notice I said DNS servers. We run, and I think we talked about this in a prior show somewhere about DNS, we run two DNS servers. We have one on our primary domain controller, and then we have a secondary server that only does DNS. Now, this is nice because it helps to relieve some of the pressures from the first DNS server, and it makes it very more efficient in your network, especially when you have as much internet traffic as what we have going across our network. Now, this year at our school, we started something called BYOD, and that's called Bring Your Own Device. This is when the students are allowed to bring in their iPads, their Kindle Fires, their Nooks, their Amazon e-readers, their cell phones. We have iPhones. We have Android phones. All of those different devices also are hitting your DNS server because they're on our wireless. Now, with that much traffic, it's a good idea to have two DNS servers. Remember, we have 700 nodes of our own, 700 workstations out there on our network. Plus, in a given day, we have about 450 to 600 wireless devices that the kids are bringing in to use on our network. So all those devices are pounding the DNS servers. That's why at this point, we could probably even use three and probably be just fine, and everything would probably run just as well. Anyhow, so the importance of having two DNS servers is if one goes down, the other one should still be humming along and you shouldn't see any problems. But there was a snag today. And the snag today, for whatever reason, the secondary DNS server was not resolving anything. So we went to the secondary DNS server and we decided that it was probably a good case scenario anyway, to reboot that server. So we rebooted the server and we allowed that to start coming back up very slowly as it did its reboot. And you know how long it takes server 2008 to reboot. So we waited until it rebinded all of its services until it was back up on the network. Once it was on the network, I changed the DNS servers again on the workstation. I put the secondary as the primary and the primary as a secondary, and all of a sudden the address started to resolve. So that was very positive anyway for us. This happened about the last hour of our workday, maybe the last half hour of our workday. So we decided tomorrow we are going to be bringing up a Windows 2012 server to run as our DNS. Now, I know that's pretty cutting edge, and even my partner said that we live on the edge a lot of times, but I told him that we are going to try it because at the very least the other DNS server is running, and now we can have this new DNS server up so we can have a new secondary DNS server. In the meantime, we are going to, in the morning, reboot our primary domain controller because sometimes a reboot, as you know, will fix a lot of issues, and it may fix this. But before we couldn't do that today, all right? That was not a given today that we could actually go in there and do a reboot because we had a lot of workers and students on that domain controller. And we still have students logging in through the day. It wouldn't be feasible to reboot your server during the day. So we're going to wait to do that tomorrow morning. Now, before I did that, though, I decided that I was going to find out how to clear the DNS cache. Now, the cache on a DNS server is just that. It's caching web addresses. So when you go to that website again, or let's put it in another scenario. Here's the other scenario. You go to a website. Let's just say, for instance, hbo.com. And that website gets cached in your DNS server. So if somebody else on your network goes to hbo.com, it will load slightly faster than having to go out to the internet and find that information again. It will cache those records on your DNS server. So I cleared the cache on that primary DNS server and with no avail. Nothing seemed to be fixing that thing. So the next thing I'm going to tell you that's so important, and so many network administrators out there miss it or don't even think to look at it, is go to your server logs. Right away, we went to our DNS server logs, and we started digging around a little bit trying to look for what could be the issue of this DNS server. But what we found was a couple exclamation points, and sometimes it talks about things in there that something couldn't be resolved, but it's not real informative. But it does lead you to believe that something else is going on with that particular DNS server. But as my partner stated, you should have, and it's a good idea, and when we talked about bringing up an Active Directory domain controller, we talked about the importance of having a DNS server on that primary domain controller. It just makes everything so much easier to set up than having, you know, separate DNS servers and then having your Active Directory server point to those. And then if, guess what? If one of those go down or both of those go down, then your Active Directory domain controller is no longer going to be able to be logged into because it can't find those and you got a big headache. So we always keep one on that actual server itself. It just makes so much more sense. Anyway, back to the logs. The log files wasn't really giving us anything, so then we went to the event viewer of the server, and we started digging around to see if we can find anything in that event viewer that would maybe point us in the right direction. Again, we found nothing in that event viewer that was going to actually point us in the right direction and help us out. So, what I did next was, even before we figured out the beginning part of it, because we were still trying to get that primary DNS server working, there's still an issue that we couldn't quite figure out. So next thing I went to was my firewall. Now, if you run a firewall and you run NAT, or Network Address Translations, sometimes that network address table that houses all of those connection records will get either full or will get corrupt. So I went to my Cisco firewall, and I went in there, and what I did was I put in there clear xlate, or xlate, or xslate, xlate. And that kills or deletes all of those actual records. Now, word of caution when you do this. When you do this, anybody that's on a website that's already connected to it via that table, that connection will be broken, and they may have to refresh your browser to go back into it again to tell the firewall, hey, go back out, make that connection so that the outside address points back to their inside address and their traffic will start flowing again. That is a bit of a caution. Be very careful with that. So, the next thing I wanted to tell you is when you're setting up a firewall is with the NAT, with the network address translation tables, when you set your firewall up and there's a time in there, a hold time, to hold those tables or hold those connections open. What I used to do, and I was telling my partner, we used to have that set to 90 minutes. Why? I don't know. I guess because we had fewer things on the network and it just seemed to work, so we didn't bother it. At one point, I lowered that down to 60 minutes. Again, I don't know why, because usually no one you're going to find is on a website for an hour or needs that connection open. And most of our classes anywhere are 40 minutes long. So at best, it would be 40 minutes. But what I found that actually works after trial and error, and you'll find this out with your own network of what works and what doesn't work. We have our network kill time now set to, I believe it's 5 minutes. So that way that table keeps clearing those records out and things just keep flowing very well. Until this year, like I said, until you put 500 or 400 to 600 more devices on your network, you're creating a lot more traffic across that firewall. So check your dump table, your kill time, and make sure you have that set to a reasonable amount of time that you can actually be able to let those records clear themselves out. I told you earlier about us rebooting a web filter. And I talked to my partner about this. And what I was telling him was, it's always better to do what's called a soft reboot. And you know what these are because you obviously, if you listen to the show, you're probably some kind of techie. And the difference between that and a hard reboot. Traditionally, whenever we have a piece of gear locked down, the fastest way to reboot that gear is to go over, hit the power button, and do a hard reboot. Not always the best case scenario, folks. You're better off to log into the web interface of whatever it is, if it's the web filter. We did reboot our firewall today, so I use PuTTY, that's P-U-T-T-Y, and that allows me to use my Windows 7 box, since Windows 7 no longer comes with the Telnet program. PuTTY is a great free program that allows me to actually get in there and do my Telnet session into my boxes. I Telneted into the firewall, and that's when I issued the command to reboot. It says to confirm, you hit enter, and it confirms it, and that is a soft reboot. When you hit that power button, you could cause a lot of issues. We've done it in the past. We hit a power button on a web filter one time, and it never came back up. We had to actually bypass the web filter and use the OpenDNS service to do web filtering for our school because it's mandated by law that we web filter. So we had to web filter somehow, so we used OpenDNS servers, and thanks to those guys for being there and offering their services for free if you really need them. I mean, they're available. We pointed all of our outside or all of our inside DHCP addresses through OpenDNS. We set the filtering up there so it would do content filtering to at least address the major concerns that we have in a school that we must keep out by law. So, and it worked. We were able to send our web filter out and have the power supply, I think, or the hard drive, something locked up. I don't remember, but it was replaced and it was back in Iraq in about a week. So for a week, we used OpenDNS servers and they worked as web filters. So if you ever get in a bind, it's a great way to set those up. You can also look at OpenDNS if you have a business and your boss, the CEO, says, look, we want to make absolute sure that nobody is looking at anything that they shouldn't be looking at. Or they may come and say, look, we don't want anybody to see Amazon.com. Make sure you close off Amazon.com. And you can do all this through OpenDNS. You can put your own addresses in there you want to set up so they don't, so they're not resolved. And you can filter with that basic system. Very, very easy to do. So that was my issue today. So our duties tomorrow, first thing in the morning, is we're going to reboot our primary domain controller. So we'll go in the morning. We usually get there earlier. If you're a network administrator, you should get there earlier in the morning than anybody else. And if you're brave enough, you can do a, you can actually do a reboot remotely if you're brave enough. And we talked about that before, about VPNs. We talked before about getting into your network with the Hamachi. From LogMeIn, it works really well. You can put that on your servers and be able to get in and do a reboot. But I always call those to reboot and pray. I've rebooted servers on the weekend from my desk here, and you just sit there and you pray that that server comes back up, because if it does not, you're getting in your car and you're going to drive into your office anyway. You don't have a choice. Those servers must come back up and they must be online. And I'll give you for instance with that one. Here's a for instance. Let's say that you have a Exchange server running your email for your company. If that server is down, your email does not come in to your company. Now, I'll give you a way around that. Since we're talking about servers, and we could get into this another night, but I'm going to throw this out there to you now since I mentioned it. I use a company called Zone Edit. It's zoneedit.com. And I tell you about these companies not so much because, I mean, they don't advertise with this show or anything. I tell you about these companies because I've used them and they just simply work and they do what I need them to do. What ZoneEdit will allow you to do, I think it was very cheap. It was $5 or $10 a year per domain or something. But they allow you to set up backup MX records. What a backup MX record will do, they will take any emails coming to your company, and if it cannot forward that email or send that email into your server, it holds that email. Now, you can't access the email. It's not an email server, but it holds the email until it can be sent and sent into your actual server. What that does for you, if your Exchange server is out or your email server, whatever you may be using, and we'll talk about email servers one night on this show. I got a better solution for you than Exchange that I always used. Of course, now we use Google Apps, so we kind of got the email out of our buildings, and we have more backup servers than we can ever afford to do. We can discuss that one night. But it at least, what we found was, it at least does not send, normally if your email server can't be found, what happens is the sender receives a email back that says undeliverable. And then you start getting a lot of questions. I got questions from the CEO the next morning when our Exchange server was down that said, Jack, how come you can't get the emails if the server's down? Well, to us, that makes a lot of sense. If there's no home for the email to go to, then it's going to get returned. But if you use ZoneEdit will actually maintain that email and hold it until you can get your email server back up. We got our email server back up that time. The next day, you know, by the time I got into work, found the issue, got it powered up, got it running, and then all the emails from the prior day started to be dumped into the mailboxes. So it does work very well, and it's very, very inexpensive. So primarily, folks, if you have any thing in your network that you are resolving through DNS, it's always good to have an outside DNS server. And like I said, ZoneEdit is a great one. I still use it today for all my domains. And it allows me to route my IP addresses and do subdomains. And, you know, instead of telling people my web address is http://209.209.49.59, instead of doing that, you just tell them, you know, my web address is, forms.tipsfromtheserveroom.com, and set that ZoneEdit up to point to that DNS server and tell your domain, wherever your domain name's registered, that is your DNS server. That's your primary DNS server for outside traffic, and it works very well. So And you can do those for free. I think you get one, either one, two, or three. One, two, maybe. Maybe two different DNS servers you get for two domain names you can host on there for free. And then if you like it, then you can buy it and host more DNS or more domain names. I'm sorry. But the mail part of it, the MX record backups, those you have to pay for those. And it's well worth it. So if you're going to spend some money, spend the $10, whatever it is today. I don't even know. I don't have the website up here. But check out Zone Edit, and you'll be very, very happy that you did. And it's a piece of cake to set up. You'll really enjoy that. So anyway, the basis of tonight's sessions were basically to tell you what was happening in my network. And tomorrow, like I said, our primary mission is we are going to reboot that server, and then we are going to set up server 2012, and we're gonna try it and see what happens. And we're hoping that it will do dynamic updating from the all the clients, which are pretty much all Windows 7 at this point. We still have some XP. And remember, folks, if you didn't hear it already, remember you heard it here first. XP has a 7-month shelf life. So in 7 months, there'll be no more updates. There'll be no more fixes. There'll be no more hole patching. So you're going to be on your own in 7 months. So you have 7 months to upgrade to Windows 8. What? What did Jack say? No, don't do it. You have 7 months to upgrade your computers to something. I recommend Windows 7. We actually got an email today from a company that said schools are receiving a $60 discount if we upgrade to Windows 8. So I think they're giving it to us for, $38 a copy for Windows 8 Professional. And we are still not ready to do that because it's such a dramatic shift in user experience. And we feel that we'd have to buy add-ons or use the add-on, the classic shell add-on, to make it look like Windows 7 anyway. So we might as well just use Windows 7 because it's going to have a shelf life for many, many years to come. I hope anyway, before they pull that and pull our, all of our supplies and pull our updates from that Windows 7. So today we're still upgrading computers and still maintaining computers on Windows 7 because it just simply seems to work. So that's the way it is, right? Especially this Windows 7, today is really, it's solid. You could take SP. You could take XP with Service Pack 2 and give it some sugar coating, and it would be Windows 7, and you know it works. You guys are probably already using it in most of your computers. If you're not using Macs, which we have a lot of those in our network also. So anyway, we have a ton of stuff, and that's just the way schools are. So I believe that's everything I had to talk to you about tonight. Hope you've enjoyed this show, and I'm glad to see there's a lot of people seems to be tuning into these shows, and I appreciate that wholeheartedly. I mean, that's the reason I do these. I put these together to hopefully you'll listen to them. I would like to get more feedback from you guys and girls out there. I know most times network administrators and computer guys are kind of shy and drawn back, but don't be. Call in, leave me a decent voicemail, and let me get up on the show. Maybe something you're thinking about. Maybe you have some thoughts on tonight's show and you have some better ideas than we have about DNS. I would love to hear about those because I believe in learning every single day, as you do too, because that's why you're listening to this podcast. You're hoping to pick something up maybe that you didn't know, or maybe I touched on something that you did know and you said, well, it was nice to bring that back out again and just think about that again. So that's the importance of learning. And like I said, I learn every day. I have interns in my network that we intern from a local college, and they bring fresh ideas, folks, because they're just getting out of school. So anything new, they should be learning, and they'll bring that to you. And we're going to talk about a couple of those things one night on this show because I have a ton of ideas and a lot to talk to you about. So much about networking and servers and controlling our networks and clients and policies and man, we have tons of shows coming up that I think we're going to do just fine for quite a long time. And if you noticed already, if you watch these on YouTube, I did pull them off of YouTube. It takes a long time to do the video aspect of this show, and it wasn't really getting watched a lot because I don't really have a lot of demonstrations. A lot of this is just talking you through things. So I feel that the podcast is doing so well. with so many listeners out there that we're going to let the podcast maintain itself and let it pull itself along to help folks out there. Because I know you probably like to listen to this in your car like I do on the way to work. I listen to podcasts on the way to work in the car. Sometimes at my desk, I'll turn on a podcast. It's kind of white noise and kind of half pay attention to it. But you do pick up stuff, and I hope you are still picking up some great ideas there with different things. So anyway, with that said, and if you're thinking about it, you're like, this Jack kind of knows what he's talking about. So hopefully you're thinking, at least I know a little bit what I'm talking about. I've been doing this for about 20-some years, 25 years. And if you want to learn even more about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi 5.1 Server, and I'm also working now, I'm going to be working very soon on a hardware class, I have online classes on my website that you can sign up for. They're very inexpensive, and they're very, very low cost with a very high impact learning. You can check these out at www.tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Look for the online link at the top of the page. Click on that. It says online classes. The classes are self-paced. You watch a video. You take a quiz. And once you finish it up, if you maintained a 80%, which I haven't found anybody that has not at this point, you will receive a certificate of completion that I actually print out and mail to you on, you know, really nice paper. So you can put that with your resumes. You can hang it on your wall. It's suitable for framing. And there's been a lot of people that's completed the courses. And there's a lot of people in the courses right now. So I'd love to see you sign up for one of those courses. Once again, just go to tipsfromtheserverroom.com and click the online class link at the very top. At the very least, I know you probably listen to a ton of these, and we all ask you for your help with Amazon. If you're going to buy stuff anyway, anything, if you're going to buy shampoo, diapers, if you're going to buy household cleaning products, whatever you're ordering from Amazon, please go to my website, tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Make sure your ad blocker is off, because I had emails that said, Jack, there's no link there, but they had an ad blocker on. Take your ad blocker off. That's the only ad I have on the page. Click on the ad when you're doing any Amazon ordering, because that greatly helps this show out to, you know, it helps us to have a couple bucks there to pay for web hosting fees and microphones as I keep collecting more mics. I don't know. I think I'm one of those people that just keep buying microphones, and I guess I'm always looking for that right sound and the right clarity of these shows. So hopefully you would at least do that for me, and I would greatly, greatly appreciate that. So, folks, I hope you have a great, great work week, and I hope we do. Tomorrow's Wednesday, and I'll be, like I said, building a new server in the morning, so I'm sure that should go rather well. If I can, I'll try to get some video on it, or we'll get some record some commentary with my partner as we're doing it, and maybe we can have some of those tips as we're building this thing for next week's show, possibly. I'm not going to promise that. So until next Tuesday, when another show is released, have a great work week, and I'll talk to you then. Thanks for joining, listening to the podcast, and downloading. It's because of you that I do what I do. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everyone, and I'll talk to you next week. So long for now. Just listen to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.